Now, because I was in India and they didn't consult me before they wrote the fourth... They wrote a fourth edition in 2001. Now, does anyone else ever do this? You buy a book, you take the paper cover, you crumble it up, you throw it away. And I can't tell you how many years it was before this guy pointed out to me that on the paper cover, on the third edition, from 1976, where it says Alcoholics Anonymous, third edition, the inside paper cover that I used to throw away, not only does it say that up until then, there were 300,000 copies of our book up until 55, 150,000 recovered, one for every two books. Is that anywhere close to the number now? No. But there's a much more important paragraph no one ever showed me. Because I would go to these service conferences and the big debate was trinkets, money, this controversy, that controversy, and some little person would raise their hand and say, what did Bill Wilson say service is? And somebody from GSO would say, service is anything that makes carrying the message possible. Then somebody would have the nerve to say, what's the message? And you would think the whole room was just going to go into an uproar. That's what they should have been talking about. But on the paper cover, they used to tell us. And here's what it said in 76. The basic text, page 1 through 164, remains unchanged. This is the AA message, just as it was introduced in 1939. Let's look at what they've done in the only time they've been allowed to change it since 1976. They couldn't change page 1 through 164. There's a catch 22. Thank God. Because every one of us in this room would have had some major changes to make in 1 through 160. There's a catch 22. You got to have a vote from 3/4 of all the groups to change page 164. But look what they did to the paper cover that used to say page 1 through 164 is the AA message. Now it says, the basic text, page 1 through 164, which had been the foundation of recovery for so many alcoholics, remains unchanged. They don't even say it's the message anymore. They say it used to be the foundation for many alcoholics. And they might as well said, as far as the way it feels to me, the way it's written, they might as well have written this. Page 1 through 164, which had been the foundation of recovery for so many of those poor alcoholics in AA that's had to do it, remains and still remains unchanged. But now they're saying it's something that had been just the foundation for so many of us. It's not even the message anymore. How about this one? Dear God, have mercy on Alcoholics Anonymous. They're going to change this. Forward to the fourth edition. The difference between a meeting online and the home group around the corner are the same. Modem to modem, face to face, AA speak the language of the heart. My God, help us. They're telling us that me online on a screen is the same as my home group around the corner. Now, they could have said that online you might get in touch with us. It might be helpful if you're outside the country or you're alone up in Podunk, Arkansas or someplace. But to say that modem to modem or face to face, it's the same, and that your home group around the corner where you look in each other's eyes is the same as a meeting online, is a sad reflection of what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous, the only time they've been able to change it since 1976. We should all be writing letters to them, right? They don't even tell us on the paper cover what's the AA message. Now it's something that had been. One through 164 is now a has been. Another question to consider before one, somewhere in step one. Do you have more than two alternatives on page than the ones that are on page 25? Start to consider it. See what alternatives come up. Maybe there's some new alternatives after 10 years that weren't alternatives at 6 months. Maybe you're going to find some new reservations after 15 years that weren't even considerations for somebody that was new. Maybe lurking notions, the book refers to lurking. Here's how anal retentive my home group is in Santa Monica. There's a line that talks about lurking notions. They actually would have a meeting where somebody would use that as a topic, and people would talk about what color would a new lurking notion be. Where would it be in the room this year? Would they change size? Would they change shape? Would they look prettier? Lurking notions after 15 years that weren't there in the corners at 5. New lurking notions. Current agnosticism. Current unmanageability. The current manifestations of page 52. That's where I get excited. That's where I am. I just spent longer in the set-aside prayer and the first three steps than I have in 20 years. And you know what I saw? I didn't have to get fucked up in step one. I didn't have to go crazy. 10, 11, and 12 work. I've been in the set-aside prayer since November 2001. Yeah. I've been in the first three steps since January. Right? And I'm in inventory. I get to be here in inventory without saying, oh, I'm all screwed up, I'm in inventory. People in my home group now say things like this. Oh, I saw that I was all screwed up and it was time to do the work again. You know what I say to them? How could you be screwed up if you saw it was time to do the work again? People that are all screwed up never see that it's time to do the work again. You're awake. You're awake if you know it's time to do the work again. Not many people get to do it again. I used to see the steps as separate. You kind of got one over here. Mark just talked about it. Step one's over here. And you know what I used to think? Step one's only true when you're in it. When you're formally in step one, that's the only time that truth is true. But shouldn't the experience go like this? Shouldn't two deepen one? Shouldn't three deepen one? I'm talking the first half of one, without any dash. Don't get stuck on the dash. They're the same. The unmanageability is a drink. There's no separation between the first. That's a mistake him and I used to make. The first half of step one. The second half of step one. The unmanageability is a drink with a name and a face to change you because you think you're innocent. There's no dash. I used to see the steps like circles. One over here, two separate. Now I'm in hope. Three's over here. Four's over here. Inventory's in the trunk, locked in a box. Nobody's going to see it. Can't show it to anybody. Don't share it with the closest person in my life. And the person I love more than anybody in the world, we keep our program separate. Nuts. Let me get that right. Let me see now. The most important person in the world, with the most important relationship you both have, which is with God, you're going to keep it separate. We keep our program separate. I would like to have a wife that one day we go through the work together. Wouldn't that be something? I know couples that have. Do the work together. Go to meetings you like. But the program ain't just the groups you like. Let her go where she likes. Let her go where she can complain about you. You go where you can complain about her. Come together. Do the work. Love God together. We keep our program separate. It's nuts. Then I started to see the steps as a straight line. 1 to 12. Back to 1 to 12. Nobody in this room will ever be able to go back through the steps ever again. You go from where you are forward. The first step this time ain't going to be the first step from the last time. We're going to bring up considerations that are not valid for somebody doing the work the first time that we've had to consider with length of time. So how do I see the steps now? If they're not separate entities, they're not a straight line, the steps are a circle. If anybody in this room, let me ask you this, if 12 doesn't take you to a realization of 1, I don't know what does. Because they're bringing the first step to your house every other day. Check this out. Ooh, check this out. Those are the people that stay in 1 that are involved in 12. Why are you having trouble with 12? He mentioned it. It's not just unfinished amends that go back to step 1. I don't need to do 10 and 11. I get a little flaky. Doesn't matter. Pray in the car. You're having trouble with 10 and 11 because you've lost the consciousness of the first step, not the knowledge. You could go to the university, your home group, down to the detox. You give a great lecture on step 1. Physical craving, mental obsession, spiritual malady. Do it on the board. Do it fancy. Do it jazzy. Do it in rap. Do it rhyme. Do it however you want to do it. But you're having trouble with 10, 11, and 12, or 10 and 11. or finishing amends. It's not because you've lost the knowledge of step one. It's because you've lost the consciousness of step one that reminds you, it pushes you into 10 and 11, pushes you into working with others. One more thing. Another question. Is grace sufficient? Do I want a conscious contact? Grace is sufficient only as long as ignorance lasts. Grace only lasts as long as ignorance. You see some truth, you better have some power to do something with it. You need a little bit more than grace when you start to see some truth.
A few comments on the first step, maybe some of you can take with this evening, bring into your consciousness. Maybe we can come back tomorrow. But, you know, a lot of you raised your hands. You've got some time away from a drink, and I think a valid question. Well, how do you look at the first step, having time away from a drink? And then Joe's been talking about the use of 10 and 11 to do that, and the use of meditation as a vehicle, and that's how you do that. You use prayer and meditation as you begin to reflect on your experience with alcohol in terms of the craving of the body. Have I experienced this? And you begin to use prayer and meditation in the 10-step tools and the 11-step as you begin to look at pages 23 to 43. And it describes several states of mind sober from which you drink from. Several states of mind, including ultimately the strange mental blank spot. And it talks about Fred drank when there's not a cloud in the horizon. And you go back into your consciousness, and what starts to bubble up for me in the middle of all that is I happen to get taken back into, because my deal's current. See, how do I have a current experience with step one? How do I do that? And what I get taken into is I get taken in looking at a period of time and the number of situations I was in that a guy like me drinks in every time. Might have some problems at work, might be relationship problems, might be physical health problems, might be financial, take your pick. Could be health. And that stuff starts to bubble up again, and I begin to see the amount of grace and the conscious contact that I had in the course of the time prior to where I'm looking at it now. And I begin to see that I've been taken at times to that strange mental blank spot. Tell you, I just had a real, real profound experience with this area. I'm going through a thing of smoking, not smoking. And I'm not involved with this other than getting to go along for the ride. But last December, this is the kind of guy I am with anything. I went and checked myself into a place for a week to get past the initial DTs off that shit. And I had about 25 days. And I was doing everything they told me in the program. And I had given this to God. And I had three people in my support system. And I left work one day. And this thought came in. And I, of course, this is in conjunction with going back through this process, and the thought filtered through my mind, it'd be nice to have a cigarette. And so I made the first call. I thought I'd try that. I've never believed in that because it wasn't my experience at work, but I thought I would try it. Maybe I'd miss something. I'm open-minded. So I call, and I indicate that I'm having this obsession with this wanting a cigarette, and they give you all this shit, you know, and okay, yeah, thank you very much, yeah, get that son of a bitch off the line, and I get a little further down the road, and it's just filling my car up now, part of me just, you know, my head's, you know, right down the road, there's, you know, and so I make the second call. Make a long story short, I make all three calls, and I zoomed into a 7-Eleven, I got me a cigarette, and I got home that night, and I'm sitting there choking on that cigarette and reflecting on me and alcohol. And that grace Joe talked about touched me, and I sat there and I cried. All these years in AA, and I think I'm doing something to keep myself sober. See? My God. Just, and you lose that. See, I'm the kind of guy, when I want a drink, nothing getting between me and a drink. And God removed that from me, and I had to have that damn experience with nicotine to be shown, to be convinced to my innermost self once again and surrender to this thing called alcoholism at almost 20 years without a drink. And just sat and cried. And by God, you can tell I still cry when I think about it. When I think about this grace and this power and what it's done for me. Because when a guy like me wants something and I want a drink, shit, sponsor, spiritual retreat person, get the hell out of my way. I'm going for it, see? Wow, what an incredible deal. So maybe give some thought to some of those pages. And tomorrow we're going to talk some more about unmanageability. And I'm like Joe, it's it's about drinking. We are going to talk about it, though. Some of the stuff on page 52, bedevilments, great word, I think. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. So our session tomorrow, first one starts at, I believe, 9 a.m. Okay.
I'm hoping that with each step, we can meet those hearts in this room that are doing the work for the first time. I'm hoping we can meet those who think they've been through the steps and they're stuck on 9.5. I'm hoping we can meet those very few who've entered the world of the Spirit with considerations for each step. So here's a couple considerations. You're looking at the work for the first time? Two considerations. That's all there is. Do you lose control when you start? And can you keep yourself stopped when you stop? Those that have been around for a while and have done 1 through 9.5, 1 through 9 3/8, 1 through 9 5/8, here's a consideration. Don't you kind of feel like a hypocrite when you say God is everything, but you know He wouldn't be there for the physical craving if you took a drink? And for those of you on the other side of a set of amends, here's the consideration. How can you still say you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable when you've been given power and the power to manage your life for a long period of time? I'm not saying you got power over alcohol. I'm not saying you can drink. I'm saying, how long can you go hiding behind, I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable, and blame it on being an alcoholic when you've entered this world of the Spirit and you've recovered? You've been given power. Something's come between you and alcohol. And you're not going to find your first step tomorrow in trying to get back to what it was like. Those of you that have been around for a while should look at what it was like, what happened. Something came between you and alcohol many years ago, but what is it like now with alcohol? Is there any more freedom? Do I feel like a hypocrite when I say God is everything, but it's still my master because I'm afraid if I accidentally took a drink, the craving would be there? Do I have reservations, new reservations? God's everything or nothing. What does that really mean? I've ingested alcohol in the last 20 years. One time I was at a party. There's a glass of water. I didn't take a sip. I didn't smell it. I didn't taste it. I thought it was water. I took a big swig. Half a glass. It was vodka. God was there. I didn't turn into a werewolf. He's been there for the mental obsession. He's been there for the spiritual malady. He's been there in every area of your life. But now you got some that we're going to call the current agnosticism in your life that'll make you feel like a hypocrite when you approach the idea whether God's everything or nothing. And if you've been around for a while and you're looking at these first three steps again, is it possible that when they say, fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or nothing, how can you go to the second step scared of drinking again? Because your fear of drinking again is based in an idea that you can do something to keep yourself from drinking again, because fear is about self-reliance. Anybody that's been around and done inventory knows that. And when they say, fearlessly face the proposition, I think they mean fearlessly. Without fear. A friend of mine told me the other day, the book doesn't mean without fear when they say fearlessly. They mean with fear, but you do it anyway. No, it doesn't. I've taken the second step without fear because I saw my fear of step one was rooted. It's the hardest one to see. Any fear you got's rooted in an idea that you can do something about that fear without God on your own power, because fear is about self-reliance. Let me tell two funny stories about people that want to keep you sick. People that want to keep you in the delusion. You know those kind of sponsors. They don't point you that. They don't point you to God. They point you to them. Call me. You need me. I'll edit your amends list. Call me every day. I'll run your life. I know sponsors in Southern California, believe it or not, that have told people who they're going to marry. Can you imagine? Show up, suit up, come here, go there, do this. You point them to God because you can't keep them sober anymore than you can keep yourself sober. Sponsors that are like that don't believe they're alcoholic. They believe they're God. They got power over alcohol and alcoholics. So, guy goes to one of these sponsors. He said, "You've been my advisor for many years. I got two problems." He said, "Only two. What are they?" He said, "I'm in love with two women." He said, "Tell me about them." He said, "One's beautiful. I love her with all my heart, but she's poor as a church mouse." "What about the other one?" "Well, she's attractive, kind of plain, got all the money in the world." He says, "Well, don't you think you should marry the woman that you see as beautiful just the way she is, regardless of what she has or doesn't have?" He says, "I knew you were going to say that. I'm going to marry her." He's walking out the door. The sponsor goes, "Excuse me, could I have the number of that other girl you were talking about?" Here's another one about those that want to keep your delusions alive. They want to keep your lies alive. Newcomer to the neighborhood. Just moved in. It's a newcomer. Walks down to the local bar. He's walking in. Drunk's walking out. Drunk gets in an imaginary car, starts an imaginary engine, drives off. Guy thinks it's a little strange. The newcomer goes in the bar, has a few drinks, goes home. Next night, same thing. He's going in, the drunk's coming out, imaginary car, imaginary engine, drives off in the imaginary car. He says what we should be saying. He says to the bartender, you know the bartender in your home group, he says to the bartender, the guy serving up the stuff, right? He says to the bartender, "Why don't you tell the guy the truth?" He says, "Are you kidding me? He pays me $100 a week to keep his car clean." That's what they're doing. Thanks. Let's go rest. We'll see you at 9 o'clock in the morning.
My name's Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. How are we all doing this morning? I laugh. People say, "Well, you know, huh? How was your night's sleep?" And I said, "You mean all 3 hours?"
Yeah.
They were a great 3 hours. And then me and Mike and Ken met at 6 o'clock and spent some time in prayer and meditation. Then we went down and worked out for a half hour. And I tell you that to brag. And here we are. I want to read a couple things. And then Joe and I were talking this morning. I'm going to spend some time going through what I call a methodology of the first three considerations. As we have been shown, as outlined in our big book, and then he's got some things to say, and we're going to do some of that stuff this morning. Virtually all the entire afternoon is going to be spent on steps 4 through 9. We're going to do a bunch of stuff, have some fun with a process we call Theater of the Lie. In which you get a chance to kind of see inventory come alive. You get a chance to see what you're up against. And then tomorrow, the whole morning is going to be devoted to the strict spiritual disciplines of steps 10, 11, 12. But I would like to read something. This is from a book called 365 Tao Daily Meditations. It says, "Practice." Says, "Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you are lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it's prayer, then pray every day. If it's meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you're truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? Unbeknownst to me, every area of my life, including spiritual practices, the effect produced by alcohol, which was instantaneous and very spiritual in nature, I thought should happen with everything I've ever done in my life. You know, start work on Monday and you should be CEO by Friday. You want to lose some weight on Monday and it's not off by Friday. And just, you know, I didn't know that. I was asleep to that, that's how I came at everything. The idea of years of practice just did not have a lot of appeal to me. Because again, I'm looking for effect, if you will. So one other thing I want to read, it's called The Donkey. I don't know if you all know this, but you all rode a donkey here this morning. So it's called Donkey. Dismount Your Donkey. It says some places in this world are very hard to climb and people use animals. Each person can only ride one, and each animal might have a different name. The riders go up the trail in different orders, and they will discuss their varying opinions about their experiences. Consider like going through the steps, right? Your home group, whatever. They may even have conflicting opinions. Can you imagine? One traveler may think the trip thrilling. Another may find it terrifying, and a third may find it boring. At the summit, though, all the travelers are going to stand in the same place. Each of them has the same chance to view the same vista. The donkeys, meaning the steps, however you got to the summit, are then put to rest and graze. They're not needed anymore. We all travel the path to God. The donkeys are the various doctrines that each of us embrace. What does it matter what doctrine we embrace as long as it leads us to the summit? Your donkey might be a Zen donkey. Mine might be a Tao donkey. There's Christian, Islamic, Jewish, even agnostic donkeys. Let's see, in AA, there's 1, 2, 3, 12 donkeys. There's doing the steps as outlined in the big book donkeys. There's back to the basic donkeys. There's one step a year donkeys. There's all kinds of donkeys. There's meeting maker maker donkeys. Okay? There's just don't drink and go to meeting donkeys. It says, why poke fun at others over the name of their donkey? Aren't you riding one yourself? We need to put aside both the donkeys and our interim experiences once we arrive at the summit. Whether we climbed in suffering or joy is immaterial, we are there. All religions have different names for the ways of getting to the holy summit, but once you reach the summit, you no longer need names and we can experience all things directly. So let's all leave our donkeys aside this weekend and for an open mind and an open mind and a new experience. I want to talk about, for lack of a better word, I'll call it methodology, a donkey, a discipline, a practice. How do I work with the considerations of the first three steps? We talked last night, for those of you who weren't here, we talked about the idea of call it the zero step, call it the step before the step, but to sit with some questions before you go through this process of the steps. And one of those questions was, do I want to do this? And you get to decide that. Nobody can decide that for you. So do I want to do this? Why do I want to do this? That's always a great question. Why do I want to do this? Why do I want to do the steps? And then we We talked about willing to go to any length. And we painted a clear picture of what that looks like, willing to go to any length. If you answer the first two questions and you're satisfied with that, willing to go to any length means that, we're going to look at the first step. You know, do I have an illness of the body? Am I physically powerless over alcohol once I take a drink? Do I have an obsession of the mind? In my direct experience, have I committed the most insane act sober when I didn't want to? Do I suffer from what the big book calls a spiritual malady, untreated alcoholism? Do I know what that looks like? We're going to look at that. Step one, you know. Step two, two parts to the second step. Are you going to be willing to believe there's a power greater than yourself? You're faced with a self-imposed crisis. Are you going to be willing to choose that power is everything in your life? We're going to look at the third step. And are you convinced that any life based on self-will cannot and will not work? And we're going to talk about that probably quite a bit here this weekend, because you really come up against that when you get some time away from alcohol and your life gets better. And if you're convinced of that, then we're going to finally look at the idea of what's really wrong with us. And I got bad news for those of you who think alcohol or drugs is your problem. Your problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. And they go on and they really start to amp us up a little and say that, as a matter of fact, they're so audacious that they're going to tell us that at some point in time we made decisions based on self, which places us position to be hurt every time, not occasionally, every time, and that all of our troubles are of our own making. All A-L-L. You know, it's, boy, who wants to hear that? You know, maybe it has something to do, you know, with my race or gender or mom or dad or all. You know, it's like, what does that mean? You know, it says, when we're going to talk about that, we're going to talk about another sentence, which I find somewhat important, seldom talked about in our halls, is that above everything, you and I have to get rid of selfishness, or it's going to kill me. That's very seldom a topic in meetings. I think that's, think about, it's going to kill you, and we don't talk about it, right? You don't think they meant above it. I had a guy say to me one time, well, what does above everything mean? You know, or it, selfishness is going to kill us, and, you know, we got to embrace the idea that only God can make that possible. See, and you got to talk about this and the willing to go to stay linked, because if you got some struggles with God, you might not want to go through this process, you know. And then we're going to talk about a third step decision, bottom of page 62, and a four-part relationship in that decision. We're going to talk about the third step prayer, which is not the decision. The prayer is going to be an affirmation of the decision. Do you want to do that? There's no amen behind the prayer, because you're going to open up a stream of action and a stream of consciousness, which is why the book is going to warn you very heavily. You better think very well before taking this step, making sure you're ready. Ready for what? Ready to do 4 through 12. Better sit down. You don't think about this. You're willing to go to any length. You know, you're willing to do this. You're willing to submit and surrender to this ahead of everything else in your life. And we're gonna write three inventories, a resentment inventory, four column. Who we're angry at, people, institutions, and principles. Why and how that affected us. Hurt, threaten, or interfere. What seven areas of self? And then we're going to disregard that, and we're going to take a look at what's called a fourth column. Where are we at fault? Disregard the other person completely. It's our inventory, not theirs. We're the ones that are going to die. Then we're going to write a fear inventory, you know. Imagine that. Tough, macho drunk's going to write a fear inventory, you know. Oh, this won't take long. Days and weeks later, you know. And then we're going to write a sex inventory, another area that I seldom ever hear discussed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't never figure that one out either. But we are going to talk about that this weekend, this sex inventory. Lists, you know, you get tired of making lists and answering a whole bunch of questions. And then we're going to talk about, you're going to take that and you're going to read it to somebody. Are you willing to do that? And Joe and I are going to suggest an experience to some of you, which is outlined in the big book, that you read your inventory to more than one person. And then as a result of reading that inventory, we have come face to face with a lot of defects that our ego uses to operate in the world. And we put a name to them. And we see how they drive and dominate our life in the sixth step. And then in the seventh step, we are basically going to ask our Creator to remove that from all of us, good and bad. Or am I willing to do that? And in the eighth step, we're going to spend some time, we're going to make a list of all the people we've harmed. All A, there's that all word again. All the people I owe money to. All the people I've stole from. All the people I robbed emotional security from. And the list goes on and on and on. We're going to make that list, and we're going to be very thorough with that list. Mother Earth. How many of you have ever littered? Raise your hands. Did you ever consider you owe Mother Earth an amends? Some of you have. So we're going to make a list of all the amends, and then we're going to go make the amends. We're going to pay all the money back. We're going to go find these people. We're going to get on the internet. We're going to call friends. We are going to get on a mission. See? Kind of like the Blues Brothers. We're on a mission from God. And you're going to keep that in the forefront of your consciousness until it's done, the approaches are made. And are you willing to do that? You know, it's like, well, I don't know. My life's pretty comfortable. I owe a little money. I don't know if I want to do that or not. Hey, it's your deal, not my deal. But that's what we're going to do if you're willing to go to any lengths, right? And then we're going to talk about the 10th and 11th step. And if you're willing to go to any length, what that means is you're only going to get 3 hours sleep, and you're going to meet with two other guys at 6 a.m. in the morning, and you're going to spend some time in prayer and meditation, whether you want to or not. It's like, I still laugh about that. You know, you know what I'd rather been doing at 6 this morning? Not sitting there with Mike and Ken. Now, like everything else in spiritual living, when I got to the other side of that meditation, I was so grateful that Mike asked me last night and Ken asked me if we could do that together. I was so grateful. That is not how I was experiencing that at 5:30 this morning when the alarm went off. Are you willing to do that? You know, are you willing to sit in meditation? Willing to work with the disciplines of 10 and 11? Then, you know, you're willing to spend the rest of your life trying to be a service to God and your fellow human beings in the 12th step, being inconvenienced and running here and going there. And, geez, Mark, I just don't want to drink, you know. Yeah, isn't this a bit much here, you know? You're getting a little carried away on us, are you, buddy? You know, it's just, you know, I just prefer not to drink and go to meetings. And so, well, unfortunately, that doesn't work, you know. And if you've been sober for a time, you're up against a whole other set of stuff, right? So that's what we looked at. For those of you who weren't here last night, am I willing to go to any length? And at least at this point in time, I think you all have a clear picture of what that looks like, right? See, and now you get to decide, do you want to do that? So, you know, again, the first step proposition. Let's see, die an alcoholic death or do what Mark just talked about. I don't know. Let me think about that a little bit. You know, and because that's what we do, right? And I'll tell you why. It's a first step reservation. Because we don't think all the stuff that willing to go to any length, as it's outlined in the big book, we don't think doing that or not doing that has anything to do with whether we drink or not or lead any kind of a life with power, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction. If you'll hear one thing from me this weekend to remember, here's what it is. If you want to know what you believe in, look at your actions. Do not pay any attention to what your mind tells you. Oh, I'm spiritual and I'm this and over here screwing people over. It don't fit in the same box. So this weekend, sit and look at your actions to tell you where you're at with the first step. Do you need power? Those kinds of things. Example, this may make it a little clearer. When Joe and I talk about steps 10 and 11 on Sunday morning, you'll see in there that the book says we need to be doing this every day. So here would be a question you could ask yourself. Just take the last 14 days and ask yourself, what have you done with the disciplines of 10 and 11 in the last 14 days? And if you find that you only did something 2 or 3 days out of the 14, I submit to you that you are having some first step reservations. You are resting on your laurels, see? My laurels are what I did yesterday. I woke up today, it's all new. I've never been in this moment before in my life. I've never experienced this breath. I've never experienced you. I've never experienced Joe in this moment. Never. I can't rest on the laurels. When I closed my eyes last night, that was it. It was done. My spiritual life was over. I woke up today, started all over again with Mike and Ken. Thank God. See? Thank God I did. Fit spiritual condition. Great. New day. Get to start all over. Not resting on the laurels of yesterday. It doesn't matter, right? So that's all the kind of stuff that we looked at. So let's go back to what I'll call the basic mechanics of the first three steps. Doctor's opinion to page 23. You take the big book, you turn statements into questions, and really what you're doing is looking at one thing and one thing only, and that is that when I take a drink, do I lose power, choice, and control over how much I drink? There's a total of 33 pages there. You got the doctor's opinion is 10 pages long. Some of the most important information in the entire book about your first step. A man who has tremendous experience with us, who told us what was wrong through observation. As far as I can tell, everything medical science has come up with as I sit here this morning actually confirms the doctor's observations about what's wrong with us. This idea that we take a drink and the drink takes us because we break out in a phenomenon called craving and we don't know why. Well, they do know why today. Our DNA is a little bit different than other people's. They have a device in them in which they'll have a drink or two, and their physical body says, stop, this is not good for you. No more is needed. Pass. We have things to do tomorrow. And they walk away. We don't have that little guy. See, we take a drink and it just explodes into, my God, I wonder how many bottles of wine they got back there. God, where have you been? I've been longing for you today. You know, just 20 years later, you know, he's still talking to you because of a phenomenon called craving. You take the drink and the drink takes you. And you're going to look at that in those pages. And you got, of course, Bill's story. First eight pages in Bill's story. Do you think, drink, and feel like Bill? To identify, am I like Bill? Pages 9 up through 16 are Bill's recovery. Am I willing to do what Bill did? And then Bill also described the promises that manifest as a result of doing what it was that he did. So then from there, you're going to go up through page, bottom of page 22, top of page 23, and looking at the physical body stops. And then ask yourself a question. Does your experience abundantly confirm that you are like these people? Does this happen to you? And if yes, then you know you're physically powerless. Pages 23 to 43 is where you're going to come face to face with this idea that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body. You begin to get the feeling in pages 23 to 43 that there's an explanation as to why the big book does not spend much time talking to you and I about drinking alcohol. It's because that's not the problem. The problem is that sober, I have a mind that takes me back to alcohol based on what alcohol does to me once it's in my body, which is I lose control. And I begin to suffer these consequences. And there's 20 pages there, and those 20 pages and are designed to convince you of something, and that is that the most insane thing you're ever going to do, you're going to do sober, and there's nothing you can do about it at certain times. It's going to go on and tell you that you've lost the power of choice in drink sober. Pay attention, 23 to 43 are talking to you about the state of consciousness you're in this morning. You are sober, and it's trying to impress upon you you've lost the power of choice in drink sober. And it goes on to tell you why. I'll elaborate a little on this issue. Choice comes from will. Big Book says, at certain times, your will is unavailable to you. So there were some of you in here who said you're choosing not to drink today. If choice comes from will, and I strongly suspect it does, how do you have a choice in drinking if your will is unavailable to you? That's why it says that in there. It says at certain times, you're going to be able to bring into your consciousness with sufficient force, which is where choice comes from, the suffering humiliation of a week or a month ago. You are without defense against the first drink. You don't think they meant without defense, do you? And it goes on further, and for those of you who have this idea of thinking it through, it talks about a state of consciousness, and I'll bet everyone here has experienced it, where you do not think at all. You do not think at all. And then you're pounding on the bar saying, how did I get here? You do not even think at all. And you begin to look at your experience and say, my God, did these things happen to me? And they talk about that crazy jaywalker, you know, in and out of AA and in and out of treatment centers and sanitariums and, you know, keeps jumping out and jaywalking, keeps getting hit by the fire truck and saying, this time when I jaywalk, it won't get me. And so you start to look at your experience in another way and say, my God, that's me. How many times have I done that? And they talk about Jim. Steps 1, 2, 3, drink, 1, 2, 3, drink, 1, 2, 3, drink, 1, 2, 3, drink. Decision followed by no action. Jim tells us to carefully review what led up to the first drink. And they lead you into something behind that. It says, the bottom line is, we really don't know why we take the drink. We've talked about that. I drink when I'm on top of the world, and I drink when I'm on the bottom. I drink when I got money, and I drink when I don't. I drink when she's my life, and I drink when she's not. I drink when Dad's alive, I drink when he's dead. I drink. That's what I do. I don't need a reason to drink. And so you begin to look at that idea, and then it goes a little bit further and, you know, talks about a guy named Fred. I've always liked Fred. Now, my story is not like Fred's, but I can relate to this. The day that Fred picked up a drink, there wasn't a cloud on the horizon. Life was going good. You know, he had the woman in his life he wanted, and he had the career he wanted, and he had finances and all that other kind of stuff, and he'd had a great day. Crossed the threshold of a room, and his mind said, be nice to have a little cocktail before dinner. And goes on to say there was nothing he could do but act on that. 6 days later, he wound up in a taxi cab in New York City, asking himself, how did he get here? See? So those of you who are feeling great and your life is very manageable today, and there's not a cloud in the horizon, you're like him too. And then they finally describe the alcoholic mind. When they say the main problem centers in the mind, the alcoholic mind, and then they describe it. It's called a strange mental blank spot. And in a strange mental blank spot, all the self-knowledge and all the willpower and all the reasons to not drink and all your time away from a drink are going to be completely unavailable to you. And from that place, you will drink. And then they sum us up in the bottom of page 43. Once more, Mark, at certain times, has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Is this your experience, Mark? Mark, has it been your experience in the last year? See, I submit to you that every single one of you in here in the last year, if you took this into prayerful consideration and said, God, show me the number of times last year when I should have been drinking that I wasn't through your grace and love, you'll be shown some. Because I don't know about you, but it didn't take much to move me toward a drink of alcohol. I've gone through a few things in the last year. We all have. You know, we go through things, right? Because life, that's just what life is. Ups, downs, lows, highs. See? And I didn't drink. My defense has to come from this power greater than myself. And so, you know, you sit with that. And then, you know, they talk about the unmanageability of our life. The idea that that's an internal condition. It can manifest externally, but it's an internal condition. Some of the words that are used to describe it are restless, irritable, discontent. Some of the stuff on page 52, the bedevilments. Having trouble in personal relationships. I've added a new one to that I like to look at, and that is that what's the condition of your internal dialogue that you have with yourself? How would you like to have a printout of that to pass out to friends? I've often thought about that. We're in a meeting of AA, and the topic is God, right? And somehow we could flash up on the screen just 15-second blips of what's going through every member's mind in there. They'd just go lock us up somewhere. And the topic is God, right? You know. But are you having trouble in personal relationships? Where are you at with this internal dialogue you're having with yourself, your thought life? Trouble in personal relationships. How is that? Start with the one with yourself. What kind of relationship are you having with yourself in every area of your life? The mental relationship, your thought life, if you will. The emotional relationship you're experiencing with yourself. The physical relationship you have with yourself. Start with yourself first. How do you do in taking care of yourself? Right? From there, begin to look at other relationships. Significant others. Begin to look at your relationships at work. You know, there's a great exercise if you're in delusion about page 52. Go up to 10 people who care about you, if you have that many left, and... aren't I terrible? And say to them, I have a question for you. And you can tell them some guy put you up to this. Say, I'm real curious how I show up to you. And have a notebook and be a little prayed up first. And do that with about 5 or 10 people. And you may be real surprised. Very, very surprised. That's an exercise I like to give people. How am I showing up to you? How do I show up to you in this relationship? See, I did that with my employees about a year ago. Then I had to write inventory when they gave me the responses. Thank God that I'm open-minded enough to do that. Because there was some stuff I needed to look at that I was asleep to. Thank God I'm that open-minded, right? But how is it with your emotional nature? How is it with money? Making a living, making a life. How is it with being full of fear? You still go through the day packed full of fear. Little vulture starts talking to you in the morning. About time you got up. Got some things I want to say to you, you know. We all got that little guy, right? You know. We do Theater of the Lie today. It's basically kind of like a board meeting. You've all had several today. It started first thing this morning, your board meeting. And you, most of you have one or two main people that call the meeting to order. It's not always the spiritual man or woman, I can assure you, right? You know, sometimes the Four Agreements talks about it's the judge. Get up, we've got things to talk about. That Joe Hawk brought up all those unfinished amends. Sit down, I got to talk to you. I must have had 90 come up to me and said, oh, I got all these up. I'm going, boy, you had a fun meeting this morning, didn't you? You know? Judge is saying, see, I told you you needed to have made that amend, damn it. Right? You have those kind of dialogues. You know, how is it with all that stuff? You know? You're going to sit and take a look at that. Call it the unmanageability of your life. Call it the spiritual malady. Can you be at peace with yourself? Where are you at with this need for approval and acceptance? That'll lead you to be dishonest with others, not authentic and genuine, you know. Where are you at with all that, you know? So you sit and you look at that experience, and you get done with that, and you're faced with a question that is, do you need power? Are you interested in any of this changing? Would you like to get involved with that process? Yeah. Is lack of power your dilemma? Is lack of power your dilemma? Great question. See, my experience is this. Anything that you're going to look at in the first step that perhaps you would like to see change in your life, it is not a question of knowledge. I don't care what it is. For me, it has always been lack of power. See, for example, weight, May 11th, came into my consciousness. I want to lose some weight. I know more about nutrition than a nutritionist. So what? My deal was lack of power. May 11th, through some work, some stuff, I go on a diet, lost 21 pounds. Power. It took power. It didn't take knowledge. I didn't need knowledge, right? See, power, lack of power in my dilemma. Is that my dilemma? And you're going to sit down, you're going to look at that thing, and you look at this idea, and those of you who have been sober for a while, we have moral and philosophical convictions galore, right? All our memory of all of our past experiences and blah, blah, blah. And how's that working today? You know? And you're going to look at the idea that is there a power greater than myself that I'm willing to tap into that'll take me into areas of consciousness and that I know nothing about. I'm willing to choose to make that power everything. And then the promise in there is that if I'm willing to seek that power through a course of action, the power will reveal itself to me, through me, to me and through me. Then you look at the third step, the idea of, am I convinced that any life based on self will, cannot, and will not work? And a page and a half in there, what that looks like. You know what I mean? If my arrangements would only stay put, if these people would only do as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including me, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. goes on and on and on. And then in the third step, you finally look at what's the root of the problem, your selfishness, self-centered. Am I going through life being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity? Do I believe that all my troubles are my own making? Do I believe that above everything I need to get rid of this selfishness? And if so, do I believe that only God makes that possible through the process of the rest of the steps? Sit with that. You know, do I have to have God's help? 20 years sober, do I have to have God's help again going through this process? And then you make your decision, the bottom of 62. What is that, right? That from hereafter in this drama called life, new life, reborn this morning, we got up, right? God's going to be the director and I'm the actor. God's the principal, I'm the agent. God's the father, I'm the child. God's the employer, I'm the employee, and that's the deal. Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to stand on that relationship? Am I willing to assume my responsibility for my part in that deal? And if so, then we're going to say that prayer, right? We're going to offer ourselves to God to build with us and do with us as God wants. Do with us as God wants. Why would any person make that kind of statement to this power? Think about that. It's God, I offer myself to thee. You build with me and you do anything with me you want. Why would we do that? Because we once again have come up with a life driven by self-will and the consequences of it and the suffering of that. That's why. That's why we become willing to say that. Relieve me of the bondage of self so I can better do your will. The bondage of self and everything that comes along with that. That sense of separation. There's some of you sitting in this room today surrounded by people that are feeling completely alone and separated. That illusion that there's anything but oneness. The pain of that. The huge pain of that. Of being separate from. Bondage of self. So I can better do your will. Take away my difficulties. So that victory over them bears witness to those I would help. Of God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. May I do thy will always. So that's kind of the methodology in the first three-step considerations.
Good morning. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here. So where do you go for rejuvenation? If sleep is all you got, you sleep more and more and more. You get more and more tired. Oh, I have a busy morning. My kids get up. They're always up by 7. I have to be at work at 8. Get up an hour before your kids and do an hour meditation and see if it isn't worth 3 hours of sleep. I met people who don't sleep anymore. Swear to God, in India. I know a man who hasn't laid down or slept in 40 years. He reaches a state twice a day in meditation. Doesn't need sleep anymore. I've had times where I take 2 hours of sleep, 18 hours of practice, 4 hours of study, running a newspaper, running a restaurant. Starting a drug and alcohol program. Double your meditation, you feel more space and time in your life. You'd think you'd be taking time away. No, you're adding time. I'll give you some examples. You ever been watching a movie and like 20 minutes go by and you've missed it, but you were right there? What did I miss, darling? What did I miss? You ever had times where you wake up in the morning, you're looking at the clock, and it's going like really quick? 1 minute, it's like it's 1 minute past 7, and you just take a moment, and it's like 25 after, and you got to go. But you ever had those times where it's like 1 minute past 7, and then it's still 1 minute past 7, like 20 minutes go by, and it's only 5 after 7? What is that? Does time change? Mind change. Only thing that can change. They're not going to change. This isn't going to change. Smacker, huh? You got to wake up. You know what you got to do to wake him up? You got to shake him up. Right? You got to shake him up to wake him up. What shakes you up? Questions, not answers. Answers are too comfortable, too easy. What's the problem? Oh, I know. You just end up with what you already know, right? Where I go for rejuvenation is prayer and meditation. I used to watch many, many people come to my house in Santa Monica. I'm not saying this at all to brag. I kept track of 200 that made it to the ninth step. Now, I didn't sponsor 200 people. Most of them, I was not their sponsor. They just wanted to go through the work. I can't tell you, there was probably 300 or 400 that pooped out somewhere in 1 through 4. 200 made it to amends. This isn't a testament to my great work. It's a testament to all we did, what was in here. I kept track of those 200 until I went to India, because I'd call them on their birthdays, and you know, sometimes they'd stay in touch. Sometimes they'd become their own sponsor and take themselves through the work. Where is Larry? No, I'm just kidding. But we both know it's about God. It's about God being the director. How can they make the decision that God's going to be the director and then you're still their director or their principal or their father? Yeah. You got to let that go too as the sponsor, just as much as the sponsee. So where do I go for rejuvenation? Where is my refuge? My refuge is within and without. Sometimes somebody would come over and they leave and you feel drained. You're just like sucked by these power suckers that just want to suck power rather than experience power. Especially if you're accidentally working with an Al-Anon. Now, Al-Anons get a tremendous amount of power from each other, right? But an alcoholic working with an Al-Anon, because we forget sometimes we're their drug, right? I was engaged to one. I'll tell you how clear she got in the first step. She discovered a physical craving that would take place in her body for the energy of an alcoholic. That's what they live on. That's their drug. That's why there's so many Al-Anons hanging around in AA. And my buddy asked her a question once, why do so many of you Al-Anons end up in AA groups? And she got a look on her face like, you dumb son of a gun. And she tried to put it in words that he would understand. She thought and she thought. I could tell she was thinking. And she said, well, what would you do to stay in a bar with a free tab? This is their bar. We're their drug. Right? Then sometimes somebody would come over to your house you're working with and they leave and you're just full. Now, why is that? Because you're putting in the same amount they are. You're not doing the work for them. Follow one principle when you're working with others. Never put in more than they are. But be there for them with all your heart. Be willing to go to hell with them. See, for me to look at the first step with somebody who's looking at it for their first time, I got to go to a place that I'm not in anymore. Because I don't live in what it was like. But when you knew that's all you got is what it was like. See, I got what happened, you know. I have experience, strength, and hope. My hope is in what it's like now. My strength is in what happened. My experience is in what it was like. What happened was something came between me and alcohol and drugs 20 years ago. Tradition 1 talks about, maybe I should read it properly. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery, your recovery, depends upon AA unity. That can be in this room, in your group, AA as a whole. But I believe that some of the problems that some of the groups that are represented in this room by the five heads of the five families, I believe that some of the problems are because they don't see that the first tradition also works opposite. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. If my personal recovery depends upon the unity of the group that I belong to, then doesn't it work the other way around? Isn't unity dependent on personal recovery? Have you ever seen many groups with much unity when there wasn't personal recovery going on within the group that wanted unity? So what's going to solve these problems? These conflicts, this gossip and these problems between these groups is each individual's continued personal recovery. Because unity also depends on personal recovery as much as personal recovery depends upon unity. works both ways. You can locate yourself the first time through the work by going 1 through 9. Step 1, locate you bodily, mentally, spiritually. Faith. Where's your faith? 2. Where's your life run on self-will? 3. What's the truth in your inventory? 4. But if you've been around for a while, you can locate yourself by going backwards through the considerations. One thing I should say about what was talked about last night. By finishing amends, we don't mean there won't be any more. And by finishing amends, we don't mean that some aren't ongoing for the rest of your life. I put my mother through some stuff. I spoke to my mother one time through a plate glass window in the Michigan State Penitentiary on a telephone and saw in her eyes harm that I never thought could be healed. She passed away June 9th. We were free and clear. There was valid pain. There was valid grief. But it wasn't grief filled with selfishness. It wasn't grief filled with guilt, because she and I were clear. Last time I saw her, 2 years ago, last month, she was so clear she looked at me and said, "This will be the last time we see each other. No drama. Oh, I'll never see." No, she just like when your mother's clear. She went in an amazing way I want to talk about tomorrow. So how do you locate yourself going back through the work? You take yourself where you are. Let's say there's a couple people, as we saw last night by a few hands that went up, that have gotten to the other side of one set of amends or a couple times. And you're in 10, 11, and 12, but you're having some struggle. Or let's say the majority of this room have done 1 through 9.5. They think they've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. They've had a spiritual awakening, but they've had a spiritual awakening as a result of 1 through 9.5, or however far they are, and you're struggling with some amends. Or let's say some of you are in the room, you're struggling with inventory. It's never the step that you're on that you're having struggle with, unless you just flat don't know the mechanics. Everyone in this room knows the mechanics. That's not what we wanted to cover this weekend. If you don't know the mechanics, there's a lot of people in this room to go to, right? Let's say you're stuck on some amends. Let's say you're stuck on inventory. Go backwards through the considerations. For example, got 10 amends left? It's not because, do you know where they are? Yeah. Sometimes there's questions about I need to find them. The book talks about that. I got an inventory. I'm struggling with it. I can't finish it. Do you know how to write it? Yeah. So I have these amends. Do you know where they are? Yep. Do you know how to make amends? Yep. Are you willing? That's where you are. And you're really probably not willing because you're not sure what you really asked in 6 and 7. Because it's not 8 that you're not clear on. Because if you're not willing, there's something missing 6 and 7. And if you're not really, if you're getting a little flaky about 6 and 7, it's probably because you might have withheld something from 5 that you're now fighting with that you're not being honest about. And that probably was because maybe your writing wasn't quite thorough. And you're going back on some of that. The selfishness, the dishonesty, the self-seeking, and the fear didn't really have anything to do with drinking again. Now. It was true when I was in the 5th step. It was true when I was in the inventory. Step 1 was true when I was in step 1, but I've somehow moved past the truth in step 1 rather than deeper into the truth. I've had times where I'm in 9 and 1 is more, not 1 like when you're miserable because there's 2 through 8 connected to it, but 1 where the consciousness of it is deeper in 10, 11, and 12 than when I was in 1. And maybe you're struggling with 9 because you've gone back on your decision in step 3. Maybe you didn't really decide what it says to decide there. And maybe you didn't really choose God as everything because of these. Maybe these are amends that are unfinished or connected to you've gone back on your choice in the 2nd step. And maybe you've gone back on your choice in the 2nd step because your life's becoming a little more manageable and you're feeling a little better emotionally. And maybe you were just an emotional drinker. Or maybe you were just a circumstantial drinker. And now that the emotions have straightened out and the circumstances are better, maybe now you could drink like a normal person because you're not quite clear on the first half of step 1 anymore. It always goes back to 1. I got 3 Texas jokes. I've been living there long enough to tell jokes about Texas. In Texas, Chris will correct me if I'm wrong, but in Texas, sometimes people spend more time introducing themselves with their introduction than they do sharing. Right? Is that right? Go. by the grace of God and the fellowship of this program and people like you and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since August 17th, 1982. Old boy in the room says, I saw you in the bar last week. You were drinking. He said, it just wasn't necessary, though. Wasn't necessary. Someone said something to me the other day in Texas. I thought I was going to go crazy. You know what they said to me? Is it hot enough for you? No, I thought to myself, I'd like it to be just a little hotter, right? I'd like to be just like melting while I'm standing here talking to you. Is it hot enough for you? That's a crazy question. Here's the worst one. Supreme Court recently banned executing retards, right? One Texas says to the other, where are we going to find our fun now? Right? They'll execute some retards, and it's a wide expanse to fit into that category in Texas, right? They'll execute some retards. If you're retarded, don't go to Texas. If you're retarded and you live in Texas, be really careful. Right? Sorry. Some of these unsigned death packs, the lies that we don't want to share with each other. You don't say anything to make me uncomfortable. I won't say anything to make you uncomfortable. Here's how it goes. And I was just in a house where this is true. Sponsor lives in one part of the house. Sponsee lives in the other part of the house. And the sponsor has an idea that the sponsee has been stealing some of his cigars. He says, how am I going to handle this? He thinks. He screams out, my sponsee's been stealing my cigars. Nothing happens. My sponsee's been stealing my cigars. Nothing happens. He goes across the house into the sponsee's room and he says, did you hear anything? Sponsee says, I didn't hear anything. You didn't hear anything just then. He said, I didn't hear anything. He said, okay, I want you to go in my room and yell out something as loud as you can. And I'm going to sit here in your room. I'm going to see if I can hear you. This is too ironic, isn't it? Sponsee goes in the sponsor's room and goes, my sponsor's messing with my girlfriend. My sponsor's messing with my girlfriend. Goes back where the sponsor is in his room and says to the sponsor, did you hear anything? He said, I didn't hear nothing. Would you like to have a cigar? That's nasty, man. I'm sick enough to have made notes about that shit, right? You thought I was trying to figure out the book? I don't need to figure out this thing anymore, right? That's my problem. My problem's the trap of knowledge. How do you get past the trap of knowledge if you've done some work? Oh, I know what to do with the doctor's opinion. I'm going to mark it all up and get all the questions marked right, right? Go through the questions. Pray for an open mind and a new experience. Some questions might come out of the doctor's opinion you didn't see the first time. There might be some questions the second time through the work or the third time through the work or the reason you're stuck in amends because there's some new reservations. Maybe there's reservations at 5 years that you wouldn't even bring up to somebody that was doing the work the first time. I'll give you an example. I'm going through the work one time with a buddy of mine from my home group in Santa Monica, and he looked at me and he said, you know that place in the book where it says he thought his long period of sobriety had qualified him to drink like other people? He said, you're not suffering from that delusion. You think your long period of sobriety has qualified you to not drink like other people, and if you do this, the right spiritual practice with the right teacher, you can keep yourself sober like a normal person could. Wow, he had me. Right? Maybe lurking notions, maybe reservations change each time through the work. Maybe now after 20 years I've learned enough to control my drinking. Right? So we talked last night about where it starts. For me, it starts with four considerations. Five, actually. He asked me to make them a couple months ago. Is this work what I want to do? Maybe I don't. How can I come to the work now after this many times from have to? I don't have to do the work. So once you see through an illusion, you got to come back to it with a different motivation. My mind goes like this. If I've finally seen that meetings don't keep me sober, shit, why go to meetings? No, a healthy relationship with AA. Bill Wilson wrote about it. Our founder had some real struggles getting free of his dependence on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that he started. He said a healthy relationship goes like this. Have to, need to, want to, love to.